Thank you for joining us today for the Career Speaker Series. This series brings to you the nation's top career authors who provide tips, tools, and best practices you can use to create a successful career strategy. Hello, my name is Don Philibum, and I'll be your host today. With me today is Richard Leiter, a well-sought-after keynote speaker and author of Life Reimagined and 9 other books, including The Power of Purpose, Repacking Your Bags, and Word Reimagined. So stay tuned. We have with us today a great sage, advisor, and passionate person who has dedicated his life to provide you the information you need to live the life you deserve. Now, have your pen, paper, or electronic device ready to take notes during today's presentation. Check the download option to gain access to resources that will help you use Richard's ideas as you start to reimagine your life, and ask questions. You can submit your questions by clicking on the menu in front of you. Share your questions when you think about them so I can share them with Richard. We want to remind you that this webinar is about you. You are also invited to help influence this program by offering your thoughts on how you can continue to be a support to, we can be a support to your career. Click on the menu option that says, give us your feedback. Now, let me share a brief background about our accomplished speaker today. Richard Leiter, founder of Inventure, the Purpose Company, is one of America's preeminent executive life coaches. He is also ranked by Forbes as one of the top 5 most respected executive coaches and by the Conference Board as a legend in coaching. Richard's books, 10 of them, yes, folks, 10 of them, including 3 bestsellers, have sold over 1 million copies and have been translated into 20 languages. Repacking Your Bags and The Power of Purpose are considered classics in the personal development field. Richard's adventures in writing books have taken him to events with readers in all 50 states, every Canadian province, and 15 countries around the globe. As co-author of Life Reimagined, he is the chief curator of content for AARP's Life Reimagined Institute, widely reviewed and is a visionary and thought leader on the power of purpose. His work is featured regularly in many media sources, including PBS, NPR, and he was featured in the PBS special, The Power of Purpose, which is being replayed, and you should try to catch that. As a keynote speaker, he's one of a select few of advisors and coaches who have been asked to work with over 100,000 leaders from over 100 organizations, such as ARP, Ericsson, Mayo Clinic, MetLife, National Football League, and many, many others. As a senior fellow at the University of Minnesota Center for Spirituality and Healing, he founded the Purpose Project. He is co-chairman and dean of the World Purpose Forum, co-chairman of the Linkage Global Institute for Leadership Development, and is a member of the Council of Senior Advisors for the FRED Leadership Forum. Are you getting the impression that this man is really engaged and passionate about what he does? He's been awarded the Bush Fellowship and Fielding Institute Outstanding Scholar for Creativity, Longevity and Wisdom Award. For 30 years, Richard has led adventure expeditions, walking safaris in Tanzania, East Africa, where he co-founded and is a board member of the Durobo Fund for Tanzania. Quite an amazing guy and with an amazing story and observations to share with us. He currently is living in the Minneapolis area with his wife, Sally, and I welcome someone today who has a great deal of experience, because today Richard is going to be your private consultant and share with you how Life Reimagined can change your life. Join me in welcoming Richard Leiter.
Well, Don, thank you, and it's a pleasure today to be on with everybody. And so the power of purpose. For the last 4 decades, I've spent my professional life as a researcher, as a writer, as a student, and as a coach to many people on discovering purpose in their life and in their work. So the question is purpose a luxury? is this something I can postpone or something for only the affluent or only the highly educated? And the answer is no. Purpose is fundamental. Purpose is fundamental to our health, to our happiness, to our healing, to our longevity, and to our creativity as human beings. So what I would like to do today is to share six key lessons I have learned over the years on why this is true, why this is fundamental. And let me start by saying that only one out of three people today has a sense of purpose. So two out of three people are waking up in the morning wondering, why am I getting up in the morning? And we know that Monday morning is often a struggle for people. If you look at the statistics on Google, the most health-related searches are on Monday morning, the most heart attacks Monday morning, and on and on. So the whole business of having a reason to get up in the morning, which is the way I define purpose, you could look at it a lot differently, but I look at purpose as your reason for getting up every day. What's yours? Let's take a look. So the story that I want to start with is a transformative story for me. Everybody's had their own stories along the way of people that have influenced their lives. And one of the people that has had a profound effect on me and my life and my work is Viktor Frankl. Frankl, as many of you or some of you might know, wrote a seminal best-selling book called Man's Search for Meaning. And he said this in the book, "The last of the human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances." Frankl was a thinker and psychiatrist and neurologist in Vienna, Austria, who at the very height of his work was taken by the Nazis, along with his entire family, including his parents and his pregnant wife and his siblings, to a concentration camp. He was in four concentration camps over time, and his family never survived. He was the only one who got out and was liberated. And when he got out of the concentration camp, he weighed 87 pounds. And he went home to Vienna, and he wrote Man's Search for Meaning in 9 days. I had the privilege of learning from Frankl directly in a week-long program at a very young age. And it transformed my thinking about life and my work. And this quote is kind of sums it all up. But he said, in the concentration camps, people tended to do better if they had a reason to get up in the morning, and that reason was beyond themselves. It was to give somebody else a kind word, a crust of bread, a hug, a hope for the future. And so purpose is always outside of ourselves, and we always have the choice as to how we deal with the circumstances we're in. So the lesson number one is that purpose is a choice. Sometimes we're pushed by pain. Sometimes we're pulled by possibility in our lives. And we have choices as to how we deal with the pain or the possibilities. And Frankl said this. He said, "Don't ask what is the meaning of life, even what is my purpose in life." He said the key question that grounds this choice is, what is life asking of me today? So it really turns it around or flips it from outer to inner. What is life asking of me in this circumstance? What is my choice? What kind of choice do you have in a concentration camp? I can't even imagine. But very little, but you have the choice to live each day and to live with some sense of reason for living. I have been interviewing elders over the last 4 decades. After being with Frankl and studying purpose in a whole variety of different ways, from a psychological, from a spiritual, from a medical angle, I started interviewing people over the age of 65 and asking them a variety of questions about the wisdom they'd gained in their life and what they would recommend to alumni like you. And so they said this. They said, and the question I asked that I'm talking about right now is, if you could live your life over, what would you do differently? And there were three themes that have stood the test of time that I've written about. Number one, they said if I could live my life over again, I would be more reflective the second time around. And reflective means simply that they would step back and look at the big picture rather than let crisis push them into choices. They would actually look at the big picture and look at what their options were more. And I said, well, when did you tend to reflect? And they often said during a crisis, during a time when they were pushed by pain and they had to make new choices. So what we're looking at today is choice, and we're doing some reflection. Second theme was they said if they could live their life over, they would be more courageous the second time. They would take more risks. And that was really puzzling to me, and as I looked at it, what they were wanting to take risks about were two areas, work and relationships. And why? Because they said those were the two fundamental areas that they spent most of their time, got most of their good feelings and bad feelings. And the number one regret under that risk-taking was career, work. And many of us today are working longer. We're not retiring, or we're retiring differently. We're younger in life. We're making choices. We're having to look at our work much more clearly under the lens today. It's the end of work as we know it. Work has changed, and we have to change along with that to make new choices in our work lives. So they wish they would have been more clear about their own gifts, passions, values, and choices in the work arena, which I'll talk about in a minute in a little more detail. The third theme, so we have reflection, we have courage, and then the third theme was purpose. Every single person that I've interviewed, thousands of people, have said this: I want my life to matter. Mattering matters. I want to leave my dent in the universe, my thumbprint, my footprint. It's in our DNA as human beings. And so meaning might change over time. Different ages on this program today, from younger to older, and our purpose and meaning may change every 5 to 10 years. But the fundamental reason for getting up in the morning doesn't change. We need a sense of purpose. So purpose is a choice or a mindset. You know, what's yours? So why do we really need to do this? Maybe you're puzzling, okay, so far I'm with you, but why do you need to unlock your purpose? Well, in writing the most recent edition, the third edition of The Power of Purpose, I started to interview neuroscientists about the brain and about what we know about purpose and the brain and purpose and health. And I interviewed one of the people. It was Dr. Majid Fatui, who's a neurologist from Johns Hopkins and Harvard, and has his own private practice as well, and about the brain. And he said, you know, Richard, you have a hippocampus in the middle of your brain. Well, that was new to me, maybe not to some of you. And as you age over time, your hippocampus often shrinks. And this is the wisdom center, right in the center of the brain. It's not the memory center, but it's the wisdom center where we make connections between things. And he said, you know, as you age, if you live purposefully, that hippocampus actually doesn't shrink. It grows. It becomes even healthier. Wow, you know, so much literature out there and myth about decline in old age. Well, maybe we ought to relook at some of those assumptions, and that's what we're doing today in certain ways. And so he said this, Dr. Fatui said to me, he said, Richard, imagine a pill that would actually positively impact Alzheimer's, that would reduce macroscopic stroke by as much as 40%, that would increase longevity by 7 to 10 years, and that would actually work to reduce sleep apnea and other sleep symptoms like that. He said, "What, Richard, what would you pay for that pill?" And I said, well, I don't know, probably a lot. And he said, well, it's free. And I said, really, what is it? He said, it's purpose. What we're seeing is that you need a reason to get up in the morning, But that reason to get up in the morning has to be about something you really care about, something that's outside of yourself. And we're able now to measure that in the brain. Wow, what a revelation. So purpose is a practice. Purpose is something we actually do. It's not something we just think. Another person that I had a chance to interview and talk with about this and about why purpose is so essential was a man named Matthew Ricard. Matthew Ricard is listed by the media as the happiest man in the world. I thought, wow, I'm going to have lunch today with the happiest man in the world before I introduce him before a live audience. And Matthew Ricard is a Buddhist monk who is one of the translators for the Dalai Lama. And he's actually a Frenchman who lived in France, grew up in a very prestigious scientific and artistic family in Paris, and himself is a PhD scientist, a biochemist. And at a very young age, he decided to go on a spiritual odyssey to India. And he stayed and never came back. He studied Buddhism. He became a Buddhist monk. And he's famed for his work on altruism and his writings and his teachings and things like that. So I was taking him to lunch, and he was in his Buddhist look, and I was, you know, in a normal look, and we were standing waiting for our table, and I turned to him and I said, Matthew, how do you get to be the happiest man in the world? And he looked at me and smiled, and he said only one word, practice. And I said, practice? Can you tell me a little more? I got to have a little more to go on. I have to introduce you in a little while here. And he said this. He said, no, I'm listed as the happiest man in the world because in the neuroscience labs, they measure my brainwave activities through electrodes and through MRIs and all of this. And somehow I've been able to light up the pleasure center in the brain more than even the Dalai Lama. So that's why they call me the happiest man in the world. And I'm not very happy about it, by the way. And so I said, well, tell me a little bit more about this practice. And he said this. He said, you know, knowledge is only rumor until it's in the muscle. So he said, we need to practice and get in the muscle, metaphorically, purpose. We need to get up in the morning and have things we do that are altruistic or that add value and make a difference in other people's life. And so I started to really study practice. And purpose, ultimately, what it really gets down to is not the end of your life and did I live a purposeful life and have a purposeful legacy. That's important. But that legacy and that life is only developed through purpose moments, moment-to-moment choices, where we choose to practice purpose in other people's life, to give someone else a kind word, to give somebody else a hug, to listen to somebody today, little moments, the purpose moments throughout the day. So purpose is a practice, and it's a practice that's been around for a long time. The man you see on the screen is a hunter-gatherer. His name is Kampala. I've been leading walking safaris in Tanzania for 3 decades. I went over to Africa, to East Africa, to Tanzania, when I was on the board of trustees of Outward Bound. And we went over to climb the mountain Kilimanjaro to raise money for Outward Bound and to look at the Outward Bound school in East Africa and see what we could learn and what we could contribute. And I fell in love with Tanzania, and I've been going back every year ever since. And one of the highlights and one of the most learning journeys that I've ever been on was with these hunter-gatherers. They call these people the original people. They've been around for 75 to 100,000 years, living a hunter-gatherer lifestyle. And so I was interviewing some of the elders in the hunter-gatherer tribe. They're called the Hadza, spelled H-A-D-Z-A. And if you've ever heard of the Genome Project that's been doing blood sampling of indigenous tribes all over the world and has been reported in National Geographic and many other places, they claim that all blood tracks, all DNA blood tracks, lead back to these original people. So I was very curious about how they've survived and thrived for 75 to 100,000 years. I'm sitting around the fire with this man right here, Kampala, who's in his 80s, which is quite old for a hunter-gatherer. And he said this. He said, "Richard, you've been asking me a lot of questions. You mind if I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure." And he said this. He said, "Richard, do you know what the two most important days in your life are?" And I said, "Well, what would you answer?" "Well," I said, "birth and death." Well, he was kind of chagrined by that. He said, "You write these books. You came all the way over here on an airplane. You sleep in that nice tent over there. You got that nice pack." He said, "Then you don't know the answer to the fundamental question of how we have survived and thrived." And I said, "Well, Kampala, what are the two most important days in your life then?" He said this. "First one you got right, birth. The second, and surviving birth. And the second most important day of your life is the day that you determine why you're born, why you're here, what you're here to do, what your contribution is." He said, "We Hadza are a total sharing culture. The only way that we survive is by sharing our gifts with each other in a total sharing, not a competitive way." And so here I am studying purpose around the world, sitting with one of the original people who's never been more than 25 kilometers away from the fire that we're sitting around, and he's saying the same thing that the research is saying. What is your aim? What is your purpose? What is your reason for getting up in the morning? What is your contribution to your society, whatever that that is? Purpose is an evolutional impulse. That's a big thought. It's an evolutional impulse. That impulse is to make things better. And animals, or birds build nests, plants grow seeds. Hadza, share. The evolutional impulse to make things better is fundamental to who we are as human beings. So purpose is our aim in life. It's not a goal. There are goals that get us there, but we need a trajectory. We need an aim. So the third lesson is that purpose is an aim outside of ourselves, and something that we look to, and we can get up in the morning and make that kind of day happen in our lives. There are three stages to purpose. The three stages are uncovering, discovering, and rediscovering. So the first stage in uncovering our aim is to know who we are, know what our gifts and passions and values, know what we really care about, what matters in our life. And that's what we do as younger people. Oftentimes we're figuring out who we are, how we play in the world, in the work world, in the relationship world, etc. And then at some point as we mature, we go to the second stage, hopefully, and that is to discover that purpose is not just about me, it's about us. It's an aim outside of ourselves. And so we start to open up the lens to the larger tribe, so to speak, the larger community, family, and we realize that it's not just about ourselves. Nothing, you know, nothing's worse than being at dinner, being at a party with a hopeless, self-absorbed person who's all about them. And so discovering is what we discover, that it's about all of us, or it's about it's outside of ourselves. The third level, so we have uncovering, we have discovering, and then at some maturation point, we rediscover that purpose is not just about our community, it's about all of us. It's about the larger lens. We hunger today for leaders, for role models, for mentors who see the larger lens outside of just our own company, our own community, our own family. And great spiritual leaders, great thinkers have always thought in the larger sense, in more global sense. And so purpose ultimately is a larger lens outside of ourselves. And it goes in stages. So let's look at this from the question that I started with. Why do you get up in the morning? What makes you want to get up in the morning? I already said that Monday mornings are a struggle for a lot of people. But right now where I sit in Minneapolis, it's about 9:57 in the morning. Yesterday at this very time, 150,000 people died. When you look at the CDC mortality tables, you didn't. You can declare victory. You got to get up, whether it's this morning or whenever you're listening to this. And so each day is a choice point. It's a choice point about what we want this day to be about. A powerful question never sleeps. The purpose question is always with us. Why do I get up? What is my life about today? What really matters, and how am I going to make my dent, my mark today? And so we have 52 Mondays to make that fresh start. And how do we do that? Well, I love this quote from E.B. White. He says this: I arise in the morning, torn between a desire to improve or save the world and a desire to enjoy or savor the world. This makes it hard to plan the day. Well, in all deference to E.B. White, I think it makes it easier to plan the day. A well-lived life is one that's about both savoring and saving, enjoying life and making our dent, making it better in some way this day for somebody else. And so don't hide your purpose under your bed. Look at it every day. You're having a rough day, put your hand over your heart. If it's still beating, you can claim victory. This is another day to save or savor. And so the fourth lesson is this: purpose begins with believing that you actually have one. And if you don't believe you have a purpose, then all that I'm saying probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, everybody's an experiment of one. Everybody gets to name their purpose. Everybody gets to claim how their life is going to go in spite of it all. My purpose is to help others unlock their purpose. And so that's my purpose today in doing this this program. I was doing a program before a live audience a while back, and I got a message. Someone walked right to the front of the room, and there were several hundred people in the room, and handed me a slip of paper right in the mid-sentence and said, the piece of paper said, "Call home now," and the "now" was underlined with an exclamation point. So I took a break and called home, and my wife said, "Richard, your mother's had a stroke. She's in intensive care in the hospital," which was about 4 or 5 hours from where I was by car. "And she's not probably going to live through the night, and you better come home." And so I came back, and fortunately for this, I had a colleague there who could take over for me, and I left. And my mother was 78 years old. She'd had cancer surgery for breast cancer 10 years earlier, but I thought she was doing great. And she'd had a macroscopic stroke, and she was in intensive care, unconscious. I got there at 11 o'clock at night. I walked into intensive care. The nurse ushered me in there, and there she was, heavily taking big, deep, gasping breaths with her eyes closed, obviously struggling to hang on. And I asked the nurse to leave, and I just lost it. I'd never been in a situation before, and I didn't know what to do. And then it occurred to me after the nurse left, and I just got up on the bed, and I just picked up my mother, and I just said two things. First, I said, "Mom, I think it's time to go." And then the second thing I said was, "Thank you." And when I said thank you, she opened up her eyes and took two more breaths and died right there in my arms. And I tell you this story because I learned more about purpose in that nanosecond than probably anything else. This purpose thing, we don't always name it clearly. We don't always know what it is. I think for my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom in that era, and had two sons and did volunteer work, never went to college, I think her family was her purpose in that sense. And I think she needed some sort of assurance, some sort of completion at a deep level that her life mattered and it was okay to go. Now, that's my interpretation of that situation. But I strongly believe, having talked to so many thousands of people, we all have that need in our lives to matter and that's what the completion was all about. And this purpose thing, it doesn't weigh anything. You can't always see it. But when it's gone, it's gone. And it was gone at that moment. And so, you know, purpose begins with believing you have one. And naming one really makes our lives more full. So sometimes we have myths about purpose. And the three myths that hold us back from naming our purpose are these, in my observation. Number one is that purpose, I have to have a cause. Well, my mother didn't have a cause. She had a reason to get up every morning, but she didn't have a cause. So purpose is a mindset. It's a point of view about how we approach our lives. And it's why we get up every day, and it's our practice on a daily basis. It's our aim. So purpose is not a cause. It's a mindset. Secondly, people often say that purpose is a revelation. God will whisper in my ear, or if I get to a certain age, then purpose will reveal itself. No, purpose is a practice. Purpose is an act. It's something, if we live purposefully, our purpose will reveal itself. We'll find a certain aliveness to our lives. Don't ask the world what it needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive. And then do that on a day-to-day basis, and that aliveness will reveal purpose. The third thing is purpose is a luxury. Oh, if I had enough money, if I won the lottery, if I got to a certain level in my career, etc. No, purpose, as I said in my opening, is not a luxury. Purpose is fundamental. You find purpose in the poorest people and the richest people. Some of the people who are the richest don't have a sense of purpose. It doesn't come with the territory. We need to claim it and act on it. So, purpose, lesson number five, purpose is not a luxury. It's fundamental. As Don said, I write books, but I love books, and I love to go to bookstores. And wherever I go in the world, I seek out a bookstore. And I was in one recently, and I always migrate to the self-help section and first see if they carry my books, of course, but to see what's up and what people are reading. And I often will buy a book that I haven't seen before. I went into a bookstore in a new city recently, and I asked the lady, it was a large store, and I asked the lady, could you tell me where information counter? I said, can you tell me where the self-help section is? She paused and smiled, and she said, well, if I tell you, won't that defeat the whole purpose? Right? I laughed, and she laughed. And, you know, self-help is a big industry. When you look today at the books on happiness, when you look at the books on fulfillment, there's shelves full of books for people hungering to discover to discover their sense of self-purpose in life and what's next in their lives. But often today we're struggling with hurry sickness. We're busy. We don't have time for self-help. We're always going somewhere, never being anywhere. Busyness is an addictive distraction. We find ourselves hijacking the purpose moment with busyness and with mobile phones and the disease to please others. And so we need to stop and draw some lines and decide, if purpose is not a luxury, how are we going to make it part of our daily practice? Saying no, turning off our phones, no is a complete sentence. And no does not mean never. It means stopping, pausing for those purpose moments along the way. Often I hear, as a coach in my practice, it used to be called a midlife crisis. I actually call it a meaning crisis. But I hear, well, is this it? Is this all there is? I was giving a talk a while back in Houston, Texas, and there was a man in the front row. And I was talking about purpose in the second half of life. And he looked quite young, and I looked at his name tag, and it said that he was a doctor, and he was at the Johnson Space Center. And I said, are you an astronaut? And he said, no, I'm the chief of internal medicine for the astronauts and their families at the Johnson Space Center. And I said, well, what are you doing at this talk about purpose? And he said, well, I'm here to figure out how to help astronauts in the second half of their life. And I went, is that a big problem? And he said, well, Mr. Leiter, what would you do in the second half of your life if you'd walked on the moon in the first half? And I laughed, but he didn't. He said, you know, we all get to these inflection points in our life where we have to ask what's next. Astronauts get to a point in their life where they no longer are astronauts. And what do they do for the rest of the next 30 years or 40 years of their lives? Ambition wears out. And if you are what you do, when you don't, you aren't. If you are an astronaut, what happens when you don't, when you aren't an astronaut anymore? So it's an essential, fundamental life skill that we learn to push the pause button and look at what's next. Look deeply inside at who am I, what is my purpose, what are my values, what are my gifts and talents, where do I go from here? And the whole question, what do you do, is one of life's most dangerous questions. You ever go to a party, to a social event, first question people ask, hopefully it's your name, but assuming you have a name tag on, the first question is, what do? That's a dangerous question because it puts you in a box all of a sudden. So I've got a different question for you to try. Next time you're at a social engagement, rather than asking the what do or where do you live question, start the conversation this way and see what happens. Say this, I'm passionate about, what are you passionate about? Well, you're going to either get a blank stare or someone will tell you what their title is. That'll be the same old, or it'll be a real connection. It'll be a fun conversation. But the point here is not about your social skills and the most dangerous question. The question is, how do you answer the question, is this it? Whether you're a young person, midlife person, older person, young older person, we get to these inflection points, these trigger points, these transitions in our life where we need to answer the question, is this it, and what's next? And purpose, life lesson number 6, answers the ultimate question, what's next? Why do you do what you do? We know what you do. Why do you do what you do? And so purpose answers the ultimate question, why? So here's one way to answer the why question. I call this the napkin test. And the napkin test is called this, actually I call it the Got a Minute School of Coaching, because in a busy life, as I was saying earlier, where people struggle with hurry sickness, always going somewhere, never being anywhere, people will often come up to me knowing what I do, and they'll say, Richard, have you got a minute? Can you tell me what I should do with the rest of my life? I said, well, if you only got a minute, write this down on the napkin in front of you. And I tell them to write this formula down, G plus P plus V equals C. This is a tried and true formula that's been researched all over the world by me and others. I call it the purpose formula. The G stands for gifts. Gifts are really, what are your talents? What are the things that you love to do that have been with you for a long, long time? The P stands for passions. What do you really care about? What would you really like to use your gifts in the service of? Whether it's in your career, your volunteer work, your community, gifts and passions give you a reason to get up in the morning. V stands for values. Values are where you do what you do, the kinds of communities, the kinds of organizations, the kind of cultures, the way you like to operate in the world. So if you get up in the morning, or let me ask it in a question, are you using your gifts on things you feel passionate about in an environment that suits or fits your values? That equals your calling. Your calling is that inner urge to give your gifts away. Sometimes people have jobs, sometimes people have careers, but I'm a stand for callings. Callings are when we can get up in the morning and really bring our full self to work, our full self through the door, using our gifts on things we care about in environments that are healthy and fit our values. And so that's the napkin test. And let me share a brief story about that before I sum things up and see what kind of questions or challenges you might have. I travel a lot, and I was in Boston recently, and I landed in a hot, steamy July day at Logan Airport in Boston, and I jumped into a cab to go to do a speech in Cambridge. And the cab driver, if you've ever been to the Logan Airport in Boston, you have to get through a tunnel to get out to the other side to the core of the city and on to Cambridge. And we got into the tunnel and we got stuck. The red lights all went on and we were stuck in the tunnel because there was some construction going on apparently at the other end of the tunnel. And we were sitting there and I said to the cab driver, you mind rolling up the windows? It's getting hot. And he said, the air conditioning doesn't work, sir. Do you want to die of heat or asphyxiation? And I smiled and I said, heat. So up come the windows and we're in this non-air-conditioned hot, and he's getting antsy, and I'm getting antsy about, I've got about an hour to make it to my speech that day, and I'm getting nervous. He turns around, he says, mister, what are you going to be talking about? And I said, well, the title of my talk is Whistle While You Work. And he turned around and looked at me, and he said, give me a break. Do people actually do that? Get real. And I said, well, actually, and he said, can you tell me more about that? And I said, I actually don't want to give the speech twice, once to you and once to them. You mind if I ask you three questions? So I ran them through the purpose formula, the napkin test, without telling them what I was doing. So I asked them these three questions, which I'm asking you, listeners. First question was, do you love what you do? Oh, yeah, this is now, picture this cab driver. He's a prototypic cab driver. Kind of out of a Robert De Niro film. He's got a little hat on, and he's got a refrigerator plugged into the cigarette lighter with his beverages, and he's got the dashboard set up with his photos of his family and his iconography of his religious beliefs. And he lives in this cab. We spend 60% of our life's time working. He spends 60% of his life's time in the cab. So I'm asking, trying to ask the gifts question. So I said, you love what you do. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 low, 10 high, what do you think? He said, 1. I do this to make a living. I said, okay, let me ask you the second question, the P, passion question. Is there any part of what you do that you love so much that you're passionate about, you lose all track of time? He said, 1. And then he paused, and he said something very interesting. He said, mister, I actually know what you're talking about here, even though I give it a 1 cab driving. I coach soccer at night for young kids. I'm so passionate about soccer. I grew up in another country where we play football, he said, soccer, and I love soccer, and I coach soccer, and at night they have to turn the lights off on the field and send me home because I love it so much I go overtime. So I'd give it a 10 at night, but a 1 during the day. I said, okay, you got what I'm talking about here. How about you, listener? Where do you score yourself? And then the third one, I asked him, values. How do I ask this question of a cab driver? Well, I said, are there any people you love serving more than others? And he said, 10. I went, wow, what's that all about? He said, I love older women. And I paused because I wasn't sure I wanted to hear what was next here. And he said, no, it's not what you're thinking. And I said, you don't know what I'm thinking. But anyway, he said, I picked up an older lady in her 80s today at the airport and drove her to get her groceries and then drove her home. And I said, really, is she a relative of yours? And he said, no, she can't drive anymore. And every time she goes anywhere, opera, store, airport, she calls me, I'm her guy, I'm her driver. Mr. Grump, who said, get real to me, all of a sudden has come to life. And I said, really? Well, you've got a calling. And he said, no, only priests have callings. I said, no, you've got a calling. And he said, what is it? And I said, giving care to older women. He smiled and he said, I'll be damned. You're right. I do love that. And all the ladies at her senior assisted living facility call me. I'm their guy. I'm their driver. I love driving them. And so here we are with a taxi cab driver He could have brought more of his gifts, passions, and values to me. Purpose is not what you do. It's who you bring to what you do. Because you could be in the most purposeful work in the world and not bring who you do, gifts, passions, and values to what you do. So it's a choice of who you bring to what you do. And so that's the essence of what a calling is versus a job or versus a career. So let me end with this. Let me give you a default purpose to try this week. The default purpose is to grow and give. That is a universal purpose. So you can write it on a post-it and put it on your mirror. And during each day of the coming week, as you brush your teeth in the morning, ask yourself, how am I going to grow and give today? And grow doesn't mean go to school or even read a book. It means learn something today. And give means make a small dent, small impact in someone's life. And then at the end of the day, as you're brushing your teeth before you go to bed and you look at your post-it on the mirror, check in on your integrity. How did I do today? How did I grow? And how did I give? This little ritual, I guarantee you, at the end of the week, you'll know what your purpose is, or you'll at least know how it feels to live purposefully. Oliver Wendell Holmes said this. He said, most of us, or many of us rather, go to our graves with our music still inside us. Have you played your music? Purpose is that music in many ways. And the mirror test helps us to remind ourselves of that. If you want a lift in life, if you're in a tough spot, give a lift to others. Grow and give on a daily basis. So, that's my story. The purpose question is really why. The six lessons I've covered are these: choice, practice, aim outside yourself, believe truly that you have one, understand it's fundamental, not a luxury, and answer the ultimate question, why am I here? Because that'll come up at the end of your life. As the older adults that I interviewed said over and over again, pay now or pay later. I wish I would have woken up earlier to this so that my legacy would have been better if I had made some of these kind of choices. If anyone has ever said, do you get a life? Well, I would say get a purpose in life. So thank you for being on this program. Don, let's see if we have any comments, any questions, any challenges, or anything that's even come up for you.
Thank you, Richard. Boy, great information and great challenges that you're having us walk away with, a little kind of daily technique we can use to find our purpose. And your example of a cab driver, I think, is really appropriate because it just shows that we can all go through that formula and begin to understand where we want to go. One of the first questions that seemed to be coming up relates to the diversity in our audience that we've got with us today, Richard. And with students and then graduating students who become professionals working in their career all the way to boomers, does the purpose change? And then how do we recognize that we're at a point in our life where that purpose is changing and we need to kind of reboot and move in a different direction?
Well, purpose does change over time. It's always outside of ourselves, though. That doesn't change. And the way that we manifest that or the way that we work with purpose, but, purpose and calling are inextricably linked. And as I said, we spend 60% of our life working. So I talk to many people. I'll call them millennials for lack of a better age distinction, but younger people who are getting out of school, getting out of college or graduate school, and looking at where do I go from here? It's the end of work as we know it. My newest, latest book is called Work Reimagined, Uncover Your Calling, which is really about what I've just been talking about here, particularly the napkin test. And it's a fundamental life skill today that we're going to be reimagining our careers, our jobs, our work lives, over and over again in a lifetime. So at different career inflection points or work inflection points, we need to stop and have some sort of framework and some sort of tools to be able to ask and answer the questions about where do I go from here in the next stage of my work. It's also fundamental in midlife, where people used to go through what was called a midlife crisis. But the research now of lifestyle trajectories or lifespans shows that there's a dip in midlife that's really happens across the world. It's not just in baby boomers or in wealthy people or North Americans or U.S.-based people. It's worldwide. This little dip is a midlife malaise. We get to a certain point in our lives where we say, where we see where we've been and we see where we're going. Oftentimes it's because of someone's died that we know, or we see we have a health crisis, but we see the beginning and we see the end for some reason. And we pause to look at, you know, my time is the most precious, my most precious currency. And what am I going to do with my time going forward? And am I using my time? And is my work fit my values and my gifts and my passions and all of that? So there's a midlife inflection point. The second half of life, the research shows, is the happiest time of life, not the first half, which is a total flip of many people's beliefs about the life. And so today in the second half, many people today can't retire, don't want to retire, or have a new story and a new paradigm of retirement where they're looking at how they can save and savor, how they can live a full life, not just sail off into the sunset, play golf, or travel, which is okay, but just a life of savoring doesn't work. So that's a long-winded answer that it's a cradle-to-grave process, and it does change over time, but it's fundamental. The fundamental necessity of having a purpose doesn't go away.
That kind of segues into another general question that we're getting from quite a bit of the individuals that are listening today. And you made a comment about the end of work as we know it. We had a presenter, Federico Pistano, who has a book that I think is titled something like Robots Will Replace You. And he mentioned in the study that I believe it was Oxford University, that said in the next two decades, 47% of the jobs we're familiar with today will disappear because of computerization. And so as you so aptly said, that it's end of work as we know it, there's a lot of changes that are coming forward in our life. And I'm wondering how we can use that formula to be aware of those changes and kind of prepare for those changes so we can still use our gifts and our passions.
Well, as I said earlier, it's a life skill today. I'll use the formula as an example, but the gifts, passions, and values are, or some other way of going about it, but is fundamental. And it's not just robots, and the whole world of work has changed in so many ways. We need to be more creative. We need to be more innovative. We need to figure out our offer. And there are plenty of people today who have been outsized, downsized, right-sized, who were fundamentally going along doing a good job. And all of a sudden, the work world changed. And part of it is technology and robotics and a lot of that. But it's also more of a service economy. 43% of the American labor force today, 43%, are in contingent work related. They're contract workers, they're part-time workers, they're consultants, they're... And if you're running your own business, whether you're a one-person business, consulting and coaching and or a technology business or a larger thing, you got to stay on. There's somebody in a garage somewhere who wants your job, who's going to trump you in certain ways. And so you have to continually be vigilant about learning and growing your offer in the world. All the way along. So I just think that everywhere we go today, that I hear from people, I hear from older people who say, you know, my grandkids need this. And if I had a dollar for every parent who said, my kid needs this, they got a great education, they're an alumnae alumni or alumnae from a great school, but they're clueless about what to do with their education, how to put it to work in this new emerging work world. And I said, well, the world has changed and the fundamentals have changed, and so we've all got to do this.
Excellent. We've got time probably for one more question. And you were talking earlier about how ambitions wear out. To me, I reflected back on, as a boomer, some of the rock performers in the 70s and the 80s who had a lightning rod of creative success that had produced amazing songs that have lasted the decade. And then all of a sudden, that creativity kind of left. And perhaps their purpose went in a different direction that wasn't public and we're not aware of it. But each of us run into that point where we've either through difficult bosses or career setbacks or something, our ambitions wear out just because life hits us. How do we overcome those challenges that we have and then reignite with that new ambition?
Well, I think, you know, everyone needs to decide what constitutes success. What is success? And if you're unwilling to fail, you've already reached your maximum potential. And so we need to keep pushing the creative edge, which might be failure, along the way. But at certain points, we want to live life and diversify, so to speak, our portfolio. I wrote a best-selling book called Repacking Your Bags, Lighten Your Load for the Good Life. But let me end with this, a definition of the good life, because I think what happens at various points in our life, whether we've been wildly successful or not successful, is we need to decide what our life's about. And so when I studied the good life and interviewed many, many people about their visions of the good life, I found it had four components to it beyond money and success. And here are the four components: place, people, right work, and purpose. Are you living in the place you love, with the people you love, doing the work you love, on purpose, with a sense of purpose, with a reason to get up in the morning? And so at different times, one or more of those factors are in play, and we look at, where am I living? Well, maybe if I move to a different place, everything will change. And then you find yourself, same old self, in a new place. So place is important to us, geography, lifestyle, people. You can be in the most beautiful place on earth, but if your relationship with yourself and others is, maybe you've parked that in favor of success for a period of time, and the people thing will raise its head, and you might want to spend more time on relationships at that point. And then right work can come in all different kinds and shapes. It doesn't have to be doing what you've always done. It could be a creative hobby or something that's different than what gave you that success. And then purpose. So the good life, I think, is something for all of us to think about. What constitutes that, and how does that change over time?
Richard, this has been fabulous information. It's almost like a fire hose of information, but you also gave us kind of a template that we can follow, a process in which we can begin to find our purpose in life, whether we're a graduate, just graduating from college, or we're midlife into our career or nearing our retirement age. We really appreciate you sharing the wisdom, your experience, and, of course, that we love the passion you are sharing to help others.
Well, thank you, Don. And as I said, my purpose is to help others unlock theirs. So if that's helped some people today, then this will be a well-lived day for me. So thank you for having me, and I'm grateful.
And to our audience, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Your continued investment in your career will not only give you greater control over your career, but, as we talked today, your personal happiness too. We encourage you to stop back to the career community and watch on-demand lectures by authors who will share additional tips, strategies to help you advance your career. Wish you all a good day, and carry this message forward and share it with others.